So the topic for this week's shiur, which comes out of the beginning of our parsha, is Ma'aser Ksafim. The unofficial subtitle is whether bar mitzvah expenses and girls' education can count for Ma'aser Ksafim. I thought that was a little bit of a tease. Anyway. So the pasuk, the connection of this mitzvah to our parsha, as I said, at the end of the opening aliyah of the parsha, and here we have, you know, Yaakov after he's woken up from his dream, his famous pasuk of, you know, he knows Achein Yesh Hashem b'makom hazeh, he knows that he's in the Shar HaShemayim, the Beis Elokim, and then at the end of the opening aliyah, at the end of the Kohen aliyah, he takes an oath, and then he tells, talks about the Eben Hazosher Sesamti Matseva. This stone here, he's using the Erez of Matzeva, kind of Mizbeach, Yeh Beis Elokim, and then he declares, this will be the concluding words of the opening Aliyah on Shabbos, V'chol asher titen li, everything that Hashem will give me, Aser Aserenu Lach, I will somehow tithe it in giving it to you. And of course, this is a reference to Meiser, the Das, the Kainim, Mibali HaTosvis, on our Parsha, on this Pasuk. Note that this is the Makor for the notion of a Meiser Ksafim. As we'll see in a moment, it's a little bit questionable whether this is really the Makor, but at least it's certainly, at least in the opinion of the Das Kanim, alluded to in our Parsha. Now this concept of Ma'aser Ksafim certainly should be contrasted with the initial, the real, quote-unquote Ma'aser, which is a agricultural tithe that's brought from a person's harvest and crop and given to the lady. Here, presumably there's no agricultural tithe, at least not that's indicated per se in the pasuk. It wouldn't seem that's referring to perhaps something broader. And certainly the Das Kanim, when he speaks about Ma'aser Ksafim, he's speaking about something that has nothing to do per se with agriculture. The truth is that if you go back earlier in the in Sefer Bereishis, just to Prakim, to last week's Parsha, in Chavav, there seems to be an indication that Yitzchak already gave. He didn't have to wait for Yaakov. In Parak Chavav, Pasuk Yudbeis, what is that, Rashi? Did I write down the wrong Pasuk? I may have written down the wrong Pasuk, I'm sorry. Well, hey, come on, give me a chance. I'm going to get to it, have no fear. Oh, yeah, so what am I looking at? Am I off by one or two? Oh, I'm right. Yeah, Yod Beis, right. Yisrael, Yisrael, right. Me'a Sharim, that's right. V'yavarchehu Hashem. So there are those who see that as an indication for Makor of Ma'aser. And sure enough, if you take a look at the Rambam in Hilchos Malachim, Perek Tes, Halacha Aleph, when the Rambam there is describing the kind of slow progression or evolution of mitzvos, starting with Adam, and then this one added a little bit, and this one added a little bit, until you get to Torah Mishinai. So the Rambam there says, Perek Tes, Nechos Melachim, Melacha Aleph, that Yitzchak, Tikein, Ma'aser Ksafim. And presumably alluding to this pasuk. What's surprising about that is not that he didn't quote our pasuk, because Yitzchak came before Yaakov, is that the Rambam does not quote Avraham. And yet, if you go back to Perek Yudalit, even earlier in Sefer Bereishis, Perek Yudalit Pasuk Chaf, Avram's finishing up with Malki Tzedek, and the Pasuk concludes, again, also at the end of an Aliyah, here at the end of Revi'i, V'itin lo Ma'aser Mikol. And in fact, the Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer says that that Pasuk in Avraham is the source for Ma'aser Ksafim, and in one of the stranger machloksim you'll find in Mishneh Torah, the Ravid is masig on that Rambam and says, what do you mean Yitzchak? Avram was the source of Ma'aser Ksafim. And it's, you know, like Lamai Nafkamina, I can't tell if there's really any. But the Machlokas Rambam Ravid, who is Masakin? No one says Yaakov because it's either the father or the grandfather. Even though the Pasuk by Yaakov is perhaps even more explicit than the other two. But perhaps it's one of those, there's different explanations, even the Kesef Mishnah, there are those who try to suggest maybe there's a Nafkamina between the two Avram or Yitzchak, but, and maybe that's why they're arguing. It's hard to know, and I don't want to get bogged down in that, but it's just that, to me, it's a fascinating kind of machlokas. So we have any one of the possibilities of these three avos. Parenthetically, I saw an interesting vort by some of the mafarshim. You know, the Ravid is like screaming, how could the Rama miss the pasuk by Avraham? So it's interesting, if you take a look in the Chizkuni there, in Perek Yudalid, he says that they misread the pasuk. It's ambiguous. It talks about Avraham Malkitzedek, and he gave Miser. Who's the he? Chizkuni says it was Malkitzedek, but he was giving tribute to Avraham. It wasn't Avraham giving. So obviously, if you hold up the Chizkuni, that may be how the Rambam read the Psukim and why he didn't see Avraham as his source.
It's also learned Pasha that it's a Medrash that says that he said this was shame.
Mm-hmm.
So if you don't accept that this was shame, if you don't assume Mahalokha that this was shame, Avraham gave Mesh.
But that was a one-time deal. That was a one-time
deal to someone else.
Right, yeah, a tribute. Right. That's also true. One other point is just that there are other Makoros, other Rishonim who quote other sources, some who say it's got nothing to do with Avraham, Yitzchak, or Yaakov. You know, it's hard to choose, so we won't. The Yerushalmi in Peah seems to indicate it comes from a pasuk in Mishlei, Kaibin Hashem Mehoncha. And in fact, the Mordechai and Baba Kama quote that pasuk as the source for Ma'aser Ksavim. It's interesting that this notion of Ma'aser Tzedakah generally and Ma'aser in particular, the Tanchuma in Devarim says that being makbid on it is a segula for wealth. Exactly, and the Ramah, in a very controversial statement in Siman Reish Mem Zayin in Yerideya, says you have a right to test the Rabbanu Shalom. Says you have a right to test the Rabbanu Shalom, not just with Meiser agriculturally, or not just with Tzedakah generally, it seems like even with Meiser. If you take a look in the Pischai Tshuva, he quotes others who get a little bit nervous, we don't like to do that, we don't usually do that, but...
But then
it's the Pasuk HaMalachai. Right. That's the Ramah's Makor. But it's interesting, the Pesach Yeshuva quotes those who aren't so thrilled. But the Lamaisa, it's well known because the Chavetz Chaim agreed. The Chavetz Chaim in Avas Chesed discusses all that's where he discusses in Perek Yud Chesed, Yud Tess, and Avas Chesed. And the Chavetz Chaim seems to accept this Ramah. They do ask the Kasha, you know, there seem to be many people who give us a Zedakah and it hasn't necessarily helped them. You know, so that's why I'm always uncomfortable with these things, which is probably why those other Mefarshim were, you know, to divine, you know, the cosmic calculus, it's always very, very difficult. And, you know, some give the answer, but again, it's an answer which may be true, but I don't like it because it's totally, by nature, unverifiable. As well, maybe the person would have had all sorts of other Peronius, so the Tzedakah staved those off. Of course it's possible, but once you start saying things like that, it makes the test completely meaningless because it's totally unverifiable. So, whether it's meant literally or not, certainly the chashivas of the Inyan is reflected, if you, at the very least, by this statement. We've discussed in years past, but just because it's so important and so foundational, it's worth, you know, a 5-7 minute review. I think it was 2 years ago we last spoke about this topic, but it's worth reviewing anyway. But Maisa, with all the ambiguity of who was the marmakam of it, Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov, Mishlei, whoever, it's not surprising that there's also huge machlokas, from katzeh l'katzeh, from one extreme to the next. Lamaisa, forget, you know, what the source is. What is the status of this halacha? What is the level of chiyuv of Maisa Ksav? And again, I want to reiterate, we're not talking about tzedakah per se. Tzedakah, both in general, the mitzvah to give, the losase, if someone asks you not to close your hand, those are dinim d'oraisa, those are pashut. Ma'aser k'safim is the idea of giving 10% to tzedakah, not just giving tzedakah in some general sense, but the specific of giving the 10%. What is the nature of that mitzvah? So here you have pretty much all three possibilities that one could have. The oraisa, the rabbanan, minug. Who says what? So let's just give a brief summary of this humongous machlokas. And this is like the ultimate battle royal. You know, you have everybody, you know, in there tag teaming and everything. So the first shita, the Shloha Kadosh, is quoted by many psukim who quotes some of the psukim we've already alluded to, and he paskins based on these sources. The Ma'aser Ksavim is a mitzvah in a Torah. The Taz refers to it in Yerideya in Siman Shin Lamed Aleph as a chiyuv gomor, and the Aruch HaShulchan says, what does he mean by that? He means that it is the araisa. There's a Tosfos Chadashim that Rabbi Kiva Eger quotes in his commentary to Mishnayis and Peah, Aleph Aleph. Also, the Feirush said this is a din, the araisa, a real bona fide halacha, you have to give Ma'aser Ksavim. That's one shita. The middle approach is quoted by numerous poskim. The Ma'aril in a Tshuva seems to write at length that it's only the Rabbanan, and quoting Psukim in our Parsha Beferish, saying that those are only Ramazim and Asmachtas, it's not a real bona fide source, it's only Mida Rabbanan. That Taz that I mentioned a minute ago, says it's a Chi of Gomor, whereas others held, oh, it must mean Daraisa, So many other achronim say, no, yeah, he met Tzachiv Gamor, Mir Rabbanon. The Aruch HaShulchan says this, the Pis Eliezer more recently says this, the Taz held was a Chiv, yes, but only a Derabbanon. Others, the Sefer Chasidim, the Birkei Yosef, all say it's a Chiv, it's a mitzvah, but only Mir Rabbanon. And then finally you have that third camp of Shitos, who hold it's not even mitzvah Mir Rabbanon. It's merely a good idea. Kind of somewhere in between an Eitzah Tova, a proper thing to do, and a Minhag Tov. The Bach was a big proponent of this in Yerideya, in Shin Lamed Aleph, the Chavos Yoyer in a Tshuva, the Yaakov Emden, the Shelis Yaivitz in two Tshuvas, or three Tshuvas, quotes his father, the Chacham Tzvi, who also agreed with this, the Chassam Sofer, the Shvos Yaakov, the Moshe Feinstein more recently, and if you take a look in the Pitzchei Tshuva, again there in Yerideya, he seems to indicate, as does our Moshe, that this third and most lenient position is in fact the majority and mainstream opinion. Some of the more recent Sfarim that have been published, this is a popular topic in terms of contemporary Machabrim. There's been a flurry of Sfarim that have been printed in the second half of the 20th century for sure. There was a Sefer that was put out by the Association of Orthodox Jewish Scientists out of London. I'm not sure why the scientists picked this topic. I guess it was easier than, you know, physics and halacha or something. But Cyril Dom was a well-known personality in London. Is he still alive? I don't know. Anyway, maybe not. If he is, he should live long. And if he isn't, he should have looked like an Eden. But he edited this book, and it's a very good book. It's basically a lot of sources, both in Hebrew and in English. It's a very interesting book. There is much more recently Rabbi Taub, that some of you I'm sure know from Toronto. His son wrote a sefer, which is actually dedicated in memory of his mother. Rebbetzin Taub passed away a little while ago. And perhaps the most comprehensive scholarly work on it is a book called Tzedakah U'Mishpat that's written by Dayan Bloy, who's a well-known Dayan in Yerushalayim. For those of you who have Choshen Mishpat interests, he's the author of the multi-volume work Pischei Choshen, which is like the contemporary classic on Choshen Mishpat. He has a separate volume called Tzedakah U'Mishpat. So, Lamaita, if you take a look in all of these Sfarim, they all come to the same conclusion, that the overwhelming majority of poskim hold that it's not a chiv d'araisa, that it's not a chiv d'rabbanan, but in fact, it's a minhag tov.
So if you give, according to these people, if you give meiser, don't you get a mitzvah tzedakah?
Avada, you don't need meiser for that.
So, I mean...
Everything you give.
So what's the tie-in between meiser and tzedakah?
Just that would be the issue. The idea...
You know,
if you held it was daraisa, then in addition to the fact that it is a mitzvah to give tzedakah in some almost ad hoc sense, but then there'd be a particular chiyuv to make sure you gave at least that much money.
But you wouldn't get a separate.
I don't think so. I don't. No, the mitzvah. I would think so. I don't know if you can get two mitzvahs for it. Another factor which we'll get to, as we get to such as the punchline of this year, is how flexible can you be in terms of what sources you're giving the money to. Especially if you see it as a chiv gomor, and especially if that chiv is daraisa, you have almost no wiggle room. You'd only be able to give it to people who are aniyim, to people who are poor, which is daraisa. The mitzvah tzedakah is to give people poor. It's a misconception when they speak of all sorts of other very worthy causes as tzedakah. By definition, tzedakah is for poor people. There's other things called Hachzakas Torah, there's other things called Pinyan Shvuim, they're all nice things, but they're not tzedakah. Tzedakah is giving to poor people. I want to point out something interesting, which seemed almost intuitive or obvious, but as you know, it's always good to be able to find it in writing, and particularly if the person's dead, it always sounds better. I think I told you that joke from Rav Schechter, you know, it's not a joke, it's a real story, how someone came to him at the OU and asked him some very complicated shaila. He came up with some very original and ingenious psak, and the person, like, he couldn't accept it, and he kept on pushing, but who says that? You know, who says that? And finally Rav Schechter said, listen, if you want, I'll write it down, and then I'll give you a gun and you can shoot me. And then you could say you have it in writing from a dead guy. You know, and all of a sudden it would be much more of a chash of a psak. You know, that's unfortunately human nature. So I'll tell you the truth. This, in the kudam I'm about to tell you, I recently heard a story autobiographically told to me by one of our mespalim, who told me that when he was a young, struggling, newly married, he asked the shaila to Rabbi Heinemann 20 plus years ago, and he got an almost identical psak to what I just found today, that Sternbach quoted years ago in an essay that he published that he said he heard from the Brisker Rav, and that was the following, to use the shayla the way it was phrased by the Brisker Rav, which is, what if you're a young couple who has, like, no money? You're a struggling couple, and if I'll have to give miser, it's one thing that I'll give a little bit to tzedakah, but if I'm giving mamish miser from the few pennies that I have, then I'll need tzedakah. So it's interesting, again, and sometimes the devil is in the details in terms of the specific application, but the way Sternbach quotes it was, if you're living frugally, as if you have no extra money because you're spending, and let's be honest, I don't know about you, but I actually do know young couples who are making no money on their own, who seem to be spending like they have no money on their own. So that they don't have a heter to not give my tzedakah. But says the story, if you're anyway living modestly and frugally, just, you know, to get by, and Lamaisa, if you were to have to give away more, you know, that much, you yourself wouldn't have enough, and then you need to go to the Gabbai Tzedakah. So he quoted from the Brisker Rav, which is ridiculous. Of course you don't have to give. Again, basic tzedakah you should give, but basic tzedakah could be a nickel if an ani asks you for money. There's no mitzvah that you have to give a dollar, let alone more than that every time a person asks you. You have to give something. Okay, so you give something. But you don't have to give so much that it puts you... The particular psak that I heard from Rabbi Heinemann was perhaps, in a certain sense, even more radical, whereas he told the couple, not only, you know, if you need money, but more than that, he says, you know, that couple, I think at that point, the one who told me the story, they just bought their first house. So they had, you know, no money. They just, you know, new couple is buying their first house. But what? So what happens if something breaks? You know, if your mom is, you know, living, you know, month to month, you have no money in case something comes up. So again, this is years ago, and I don't want to even put a dollar figure on it because the dollar figure is not as important. That probably might be case by case, and certainly, you know, decade by decade with inflation, etc. But basically, there was a certain sum, and I think it was a four-figure sum, if I remember correctly. Rabbi Heinemann said, "En chanami, you have to keep that in the bank. You don't have to give miser if that's going to take that away. That you need to keep for a rainy day. If you'll have extra money left over, so then you can give miser from that." In essence, in lamdas, so to speak, conceptually, it's a very similar psak. And the basic point is, in these senses, we say chayecha kodmin. Again, there's a basic mitzvah of tzedakah, but if to give miser in a way that would make you indigent and needy, there's no mucker for that whatsoever. Now, what I want to do in the next 20 minutes to finish up the shiur is to shift focus and talk about the very interesting discussion of what you give miser to, or what expenses can quote-unquote count for miser. And the very nature of this kind of question, especially if we'll see those poskim who accept certain broader applications, obviously already indicates by those poskim who are willing to conceive of broader sources, recipients of miser funds, that we're not talking about something that's strictly tzedakah-based, Alan. Because if you start talking about using it for all sorts of nice causes and good deeds, again, they're all nice and they're all good, but they're not tzedakah. So the fact that you may have some postcards, we'll see shortly, who are willing to allow money to be given to different causes beyond what would be normally constituting a tzedakah is in itself an indication that we are talking about perhaps something more broadly. One thing I should say, even before we get to the examples I want to mention, which is that it seems to me that all the postcards agree, again, lichat chila, that one should, at the very least, if not b'dieved, but lecha chila for sure, people should use their miser for people who are aniyim generally, and there is an adifas based on certain midrashim, there's a preference for people who are aniyim because they're learning. If you can capture two birds with one stone, which is not the same thing as giving it to the yeshiva for a new building. That's also wonderful, but a different kiyum. But people who are... I didn't get to that yet. Oh. But within this idea, which may be b'dieved, and it's certainly l'chachila to give it to aniyim, there is a adifas for people who are aniyim who are being oseik in Torah, but the catchphrase being giving it to aniyim. We'll see momentarily there are those folks who talk about yes, and giving it to yeshiva will not count, but then there are others who are going to have a little bit more of a broader definition. My point is just that the whole discussion is indicative of perhaps a little bit of a different birya, a little different, you know, a creature than strict tzedakah. And as I said, even those who are going to be flexible do see this kind of a lachachila or a preference to, so to speak, keep it in the more natural confines of aniyim. So some of the earliest sources that discuss a broader application bring it up, but they all reject it. And that is, for example, the Ma'aril has a tshuva where he was asked about using miser money to fulfill mitzvos. I have a certain chiyuv to do. So davening doesn't cost me money, but many other mitzvahs, we all know, many mitzvahs cost us money. But I have to do it. Can I use miser money to fulfill mitzvahs that I have to do? And the Maharil was absolutely strict. He said, no, you cannot. Not only can you not do it generally, you can't even do it for mitzvahs which themselves are financial. For example, Matanos L'Avyonim. If you would have thought anything, Matanos L'Avyonim anyway is a chesed type of mitzvah, it's money mamish. He says, no, Matanos L'Avyonim, at least the bare the actual mitzvah, has to be given, and that's got nothing. You would give it anyway. It's not because of Maaser Ksavim. You're giving it because of it's a mitzvah of Purim, and therefore it does not count. The Magen Avraham paskens this way, and the Mishnah Berura paskens like this as well. Now the truth is that the assumption generally is that you only have to give a dollar to a person in terms of contemporary currency. It would be a dollar, let's say, a person for Matanos Avyonim. So anything you give beyond that, it seems to me that you certainly could count theoretically. Depending on conversations which you haven't had yet. But the chiyuv that he's talking about is not to give $100 to the Shul Tzedakah Fund or $500 to some Gabbai Tzedakah in Israel. That's nice. It's wonderful. It's a huge mitzvah. It's great. But that's not the chiyuv. The chiyuv is obviously much more limited. So I'm right, and I want to be clear. Right now I'm talking about chiyuvim that you have. Says the Maharil, you don't get to piggyback chiyuvim. Chiyuvim that you have cannot come off of Maaser Ksavim. Oh, I think it's more of a havamina than if I spent money on my sukkah. Can that count? Unless you think ironically not, but you think it's more of a havamina to say the sukkah should count?
Yeah, because
interesting.
Because sukkah's not a financial
mitzvah. The difference is obvious. I just thought the difference would point in the opposite direction that you think it would point it to. Okay. Well, either way, right now, it's not a question of who's more or less likely. Maharil says they're both not true. Or they're both rejected. Any chiyuv that you have, you cannot say, oh, I'm going to use that for Maaser Ksavim, or I'll use the Maaser Ksavim money to take care of that chiyuv. Those are two. Maaser Ksavim is one thing, chiyuvim that are independent are another. You could argue that it sounds like he may be saying it's even an absolute chiyuv. It's not clear. I don't remember.
They have sources. When people say this about Maitre, is there sources or they just
make it up? Yesh v'yesh. All the contemporary poems, the Maharil is a few hundred years old.
Right.
All the contemporary poems quote the Maharil. That's their source.
Right, I understand.
I don't recall. I don't recall. I think, generally speaking, what I alluded to, which I think is true, generally speaking in the poskim, those who see it more as a chiyuv, especially to see it as a daraisa, are much more limiting to where you can give it. And those who see it anyway is just a minhag, as we'll see momentarily, there are those poskim are much more liberal, much more lenient than what we've seen. So generally speaking, those who see it as a chiyuv are much more strict. But there's no pasuk in Chumash and there's no Gemara. Let me be very straight with you. There's no pasuk in Chumash or no Gemara that can be cited one way or the other. Not either way. There's no makaros. That, according to some of the poskim will help us only a minhag, they bring that right. They say it's not in Shas. Do a Bailan search on Maaser Ksavim. Won't find it. So that's exactly, so there really are, there's a paucity of sources, which, whenever you have silence, it leads to sometimes veering, opposite conclusions.
I don't understand. There's a chiyuv to give tzedakah, and we're saying you can't use miser to fulfill a chiyuv, a mitzvah. How can you do that?
Again, we're talking about, if you assume that there's a shear, that there's this amount. And again, I haven't even got into it because it would be a separate topic. But many poskim recommend, early poskim recommend, this idea of being mafresh money, setting aside separate tzedakah accounts. So by definition, it is. If the purpose of it is to give tzedakah, so then yes, you will take money from that quote-unquote miser account to give to the guy who knocked at the door. Am I the only one who has four knocks tonight? I was funny, as I'm preparing this year, I said to my wife, she says, halacha l'maisa! Yeah, the rabbi's a big giver. Everyone knows that. So, as I told somebody, not tonight, but I told somebody recently who was unhappy, I said, if you'll be happy, I'll write you a check for $1 million. If it'll make you happy, I'll write for $1 million. But if I were you, I'd accept the one I'm giving. You can cash that one.
A small sign, a check from the shul, Marvin Diamond gives out a check, and give them Marvin the Shrek.
They do, but I give personally too. The shul doesn't give my chiyuv. I want a mitzvah too. That's not our topic, but I would say, but it's a good question. The answer is no. No, I or anybody else have a private chiyuv. Yeah, I have a private chiyuv. So that's the, and the question is, how much do I have to give? So if I'm anyway giving for the mitzvah of tzedakah, can I say that, you know, in my accounting, so to speak, this count towards my chiyuv? So the answer that everyone agrees with is, if you're giving actual tzedakah, meaning to a poor person, then you for sure can. If I was giving for some other mitzvah which cost me money, can I say that comes off the tzedakah money? And the answer, according to these poskim, is no. In fact, many poskim then discuss. So this really seems to be not debated, as far as I know. I didn't see almost anybody who felt that this would be sufficient. However, what's more of an interesting debate is, what if you don't have a mitzvah chiyuvis, but you have a mitzvah kiyumis? Not something you have to do, but for whatever the circumstances are, you may want to do, and if you would do it, it's a mitzvah. We're not just talking about a nice minhag. It's a mitzvah, but I don't have to do it. So, for example, they said, what if there was like a chanasas kala fund? Not, again, if there's, you have a kala in front of you, mamash has no money, then that's an absolute chiyuv to support. It's one of the highest tzedakas you can give. But they speak, the tshuvas have, it's hard to know exactly what circumstances they were dealing with, but they said it wasn't like an absolute chiyuv situation, but, you know, the couple could use a little help, something like that. It was still a nice thing. It would definitely count as a mitzvah to do, but not in a way that I had an absolute chiyuv to do, or some community program, which, you know, the community needs to support, but whether I need to give, you know, that's Lav Dafka. Things such as this. Or the Ma'aril has lighting the shul on Rosh Hashanah. It's an interesting, this was the original Ma'aril here in Sifri Ma'aril, not in his Tshuvas, but in Sifri Ma'aril, he discusses the money that it costs to light the shul over Yom HaRayim. Now, is there a chiyuv for any individual to pay for that? No chiyuv for that. But it's certainly a nice kind of a mitzvah to be providing the light and the shul for Yom Kippur, you know, or Rosh Hashanah. It's a nice thing. So could that count from my Meisr Ksafim? On the one hand, it's a mitzvah. On the other hand, no one would turn to me and say, you have to do it. So that's also discussed by the Ma'aril, and the Ma'aril also says no. No, you cannot use Meisr Ksafim for any kind of a mitzvah, even if you're not obligated. And the Ramah and Yeridea paskins this way. The Ramah and Yeridea paskins this way. However, I have some clues for you, don't worry. The Drisha, in his commentary on the tour, says, listen, if you wouldn't be able to afford to do the mitzvah otherwise, because listen, I this money is for food, and this money is in the Meisr fund, and if I can't use the money for food, and if you're not letting me use the money in the Meisr fund, I just won't do the mitzvah. So the Rishon says, if you have that kind of a circumstance, so then you can use, quote-unquote, Meisr money, or count it towards Meisr. And the Shach and the Taz paskin this way as well. And a wrinkle to this, which has become very popular, so to speak, and it's a variation, really, of this chiluk between chiyuv and kiyum, is quoted in a number of poskim, and certainly Chavetz Chaim seems to accept it, in Avas Chesed, and that is where he basically says as well, mitzvos in which you're not obligated to do, and you may not otherwise do, even if it's not a question of absolute bare bones or extra money. Chavetz Chaim seems to be a little bit more flexible than that even. But the bottom line is, I don't have to do it. I probably wouldn't do it. But this will, you know, this will encourage me, so to speak. The Chavetz Chaim does allow, you know, good causes to count towards Meisr Ksafim. So there's a lot more about this, but that's kind of a thumbnail sketch of the two basic schools of thought when it comes to mitzvos. Everyone holds that you can't do it for a mitzvah you're personally obligated in, you have a chovas haguf for. What about if you have a mitzvah that's just a good idea, but I'm not necessarily personally obliged to do? There you have a machlokes. There are definitely machmirim, there are, you know, first and foremost, but there are definitely mekilim, and it seems to me that the consensus of poskim are mekil. Just, you know, my Rebbe in these things, Rabbi Willig, is in a humongous mekil in this area, and it's clearly l'shitaso, because he holds the whole thing is only a minug. And then he basically holds, you know, pick your mamarashach, either say it counts towards meiser, or say I'm not going to do the minug. Either way, to tell a person they couldn't do something, or they have to do something, as the case may be, I don't think I've ever, I've spoken to him over the years numerous times about meiser shilas, and I almost can't even get the shila out before he says mutter. But again, that's based on an orientation, which clearly many poskim have, and Piskei Tshuva seems to indicate that most poskim have this, but there clearly is a very legitimate mainstream view that is more restricted, again, because seemingly they have a different approach. So I want to just talk about, we have 10 minutes left, two shilas in particular. If we have a chance, if there's extra time, I can discuss some other shilas, because there really are a lot of topics that come up on this. But I want to think about two things. One is education. I'm not talking about shul dues or building campaigns. It's another topic for another time, after the shul's been built and all the dues have been paid. Yeah. You have to know how to, you know, you have to know how to pick your fights. Anyway, that, whatever, anyway. And then I also want to speak about a shaila, a real-life, bona fide shaila I was asked within the month, can I use Meiser money to pay for the bar mitzvah kiddush? So, the education issue was brought up by some of the earlier poskim, our Hashulchan already, the Avas Chesed, Chavetz Chaim, Rav Yitzchak Blazer, that's the Talmud Mufak of Rav Yisrael Salanter, and his Shuvas Pri Yitzchak, all discuss it, and basically, you won't be surprised that the earlier the source is, the less likely it is to discuss girls. For a simple reason, it wasn't a shayla, they weren't educating girls. So all the early shaylas are just about boys' education for obvious reasons. And, b'peh echad, they all say you cannot use it for Meiser. And again, it makes perfect sense in light of the background that we gave, because you have a personal chiyuv as a father to educate your children, to be lamadatimus. Oh, we'll get to it. But you have a chiyuv lamadatimus b'neichem, you have a chiyuv to educate your sons, and therefore, we just said, any chiyuv that you have, you don't get to double dip, so to speak, and use Meiser k'safim for. Though most of the poskim do not make distinctions between ages. They just say you can't do it, period. However, there are poskim who do offer some kind of compromises and do speak about different ages. And there's two discussions which should not be confused. One is, in general, what obligation do parents have to support their children. If you would look in Shulchan Aruch, you would be scandalized. And if we publicize Shulchan Aruch, it would be a huge Chil Hashem. Right? The number is 6. Until the age of 6, you have to support your kids. And after that, off to work. So, you remind your kids of that all the time? I want to know something. You know, there's all sorts of ways to skin a cat, as the saying goes. I was walking out of Goldberg's one day this week for breakfast with a member of our shul who's, Baruch Hashem, very comfortable, and, you know, but does not want children to, you know, be too, you know, feel too spoiled or anything like that. And he said to me that his children were complaining about something, like maybe, you know, he put them on this kind of a bus to go to New York and not that kind of a train, so maybe, and he says, listen, look at the news, you know what's going on in Iraq? You know, he goes, the first digit in your age is now a 2. People are dying, many of them, the first digit is a 1. You know what, if you have any complaints, put on a helmet. I was like, okay! You know, so, and you have your own way of reminding them about the 6. Yeah, you say with the 6. All right, you know, everyone's got their way. This is not a Hilchos parenting shiur, but anyway, I couldn't tell if he was being serious or not. But the fact that I couldn't tell was already scary enough. And he really may have been serious. Anyway, the point is that Rav Moshe already wrote, I don't remember how long ago the tshuva was, but Rav Moshe wrote with Pem Mole years and years ago that none of that is applicable nowadays. That was only true when people at an incredibly young age were already expected to be working. You had these little kids who were going out and working as cobblers or whatever they were doing something. Rav Moshe writes, in our day and age, and there's a certain flexibility to it. Rav Moshe says, in whatever culture you're living in, whatever is considered normal for parents to support their children, then that is the chiyuv on the family. So that's one point. There's a specific point, though, which maybe is what you're alluding to, which is about Talmud Torah per se. What is the chiyuv for a father in Talmud Torah? And many poskim write, ironically this might be scandalous to all Rosh Hashivas, but many poskim write that there is no chiyuv to pay for your children's education for any kind of higher learning, which is usually defined, broadly speaking, as Gemara and above. Torah Shebichsav, you have a chiyuv to teach your children, in a very strict sense. Right, but any kind of Torah, and there are some poskim who write that. The Pri Yitzchak, Rav Itzlami Petterberg, he's, you know, Lula Vistafina, he's not sure, but he does raise that possibility. And this, the Tzedakah Mishpat, Dayan Bluah, he also discusses this idea of maybe older kids in yeshiva. I would say that's the kind of thing that Mamash, at the very least I would say, or should say the most I'd be willing to say is, that's a case-by-case basis kind of thing in which a shaila should be asked. Generally speaking, again, my orientation, especially from Rabbi Willig, is to be makel on these things generally. But to the extent, and therefore I would say, listen, it's only a minhag. If you don't want to do it, then don't do it. It's not a minhag, it's obligatory. But nevertheless, to the extent that someone wants to feel good about themselves, if you will, say, I'm doing meiser, can they count their children's yeshiva education, let alone kollel or whatever lifestyle, can they count that as their meiser? So my personal feeling about that is, number one, it should be case-by-case basis, but number two is, I think that my personal orientation is to be relatively strict on this in the following sense, and we'll get to a similar point when we discuss girls' education in a minute, but the bottom line is, things which are considered, you know, broadly speaking, in our day and age, to be not just accepted, but necessary to raise from kids. I don't mean necessary to produce gedolim, but necessary to raise from kids, which to me is at least through high school. Forget fifth grade Gemara thing. I personally think that that is a totally outdated chiluk. At least through high school. And you want to start making an argument, they got to go to Israel. I could even hear that, but I'd stop at high school, frankly. At least through Israel, in my opinion, is an absolute chiv for any parent nowadays. I say that, forget the Maaser Ksavim, which is in general, I would make that statement. And in my opinion, it would play into Maaser Ksavim, however you applied it. But I think that that's, personally, I think that these are nice chilukim in theory. If you're going to make any chiluk, I'd say high school and above. I would not make anything earlier than that. So, Lamaisa, but again, Kolel, you know, that's certainly not necessary. And Lamaisa, what's the difference between, you could definitely make the argument, what's the difference between giving money to some yeshiva or supporting some other poor Kolel person? I might as well support my own child. I think that is a reasonable svara. But that's obviously something much beyond. No one holds, except for sometimes the children, that the parents are obligated to support them. But the children should be educated, and they should have a car.
But what happens to the minute? What happens to the concept of, you know, what's normal?
Listen, I don't think we live in such a community in which you could say it's so overwhelmingly assumed that parents would do that thing. If you told me that there is such a community, then Taka, maybe that would be a chiyuv. I'm not opposing in that community, whatever that community may be that you're alluding to. It's interesting, in this context, girls' education is brought up by Rav Moshe. And there were poskim, I think somebody told me this, the name of a Baltimore rabbi from last generation, there were poskim who held that girls' education is not a chiyuv. L'maaseh is b'neichem, lo is b'neseichem. And therefore, if you're going to raise your children, you send your kids to school, you could quote-unquote deduct that. Rav Moshe, I think, has an obvious and compelling, so Rav Moshe rejects that out of hand. And virtually all the contemporary poskim that I've seen, certainly the American poskim, but I think the Israeli ones as well, also reject that. So there's two svaras that can be offered, and I think the second one is even stronger. Rav Moshe has a chiddush where he says, listen, dina de machusa dina. It's not like you could say, like in the old days, I could keep her at home, but I'm sending her to school, but I don't have to do that, so I'm going to count that for my ma'aser ksavim. Adarav, you're going to have to send them to school. If you don't pay the money to the school, to the day school or for the bijako or whatever, then you're going to have to go to public school. And no, you don't have a right, or much right, you don't have a right to send your kids to public school, because you're going to be putting the frumkeit into question. And therefore, you taka archive to send your kids to the girls' school, whether they're girls or boys. You have to do it, you have to keep them frum. And therefore, he says, an absolute chiv, and therefore, because of the machusadina public school, knach, therefore, it becomes obligated.
And that's a sure apply for boys also. That same score would
apply. About it. Oh, that's a good point. That's a good point. I didn't put two and two together, but you're right. And at least through high school also, right? What's the American law? 16?
High 16.
Right, okay, fine. So I was holding Al-Srumkai beyond 16. But if you just want to use this more minimalist approach, we get to 16 right away. That's a great point. My second point, which I didn't really chop so much in Rav Moshe, maybe he said it and I missed it, but to me this is the real answer, which is even better than the one that he gave, which is the same one about boys where I came up with the number of 16, of high school, which is going back to the Chavetz Chaim and the founding of the Beit Yaakov movement, there's been an awareness that there are certain realities that have changed in which require formalized Jewish education, not l'man the mitzvahs of Talmud Torah, but l'man the more minimal, more basic mitzvah, I should say, of being frum. And there's almost nobody, you know, even Satmar, with their much more limited education even than Beis Yaakov, but there's no one who thinks that, I mean, cases, there are always exceptions of people who homeschool, they all end up in Baltimore, and there's more homeschools in Baltimore, I think, than the rest of the country combined. There's no question about it. But okay, maybe they're right for their children. I'm not being critical. Maybe that's right for their children. But as a general rule, there's nobody who doesn't agree that girls need to have formal education. And I don't know anyone who also disagrees that that should be any less than a full high school education. So to me, it's universally accepted that for basic Yiddishkeit reasons, we have to educate our daughters at least through high school. So to me, it's an absolute shame on any parent to send their daughters to school. Which school? How much? That's a different question. But they have to send the kids to, from school through high school. And if they, whatever those expenses are, again, there's always exceptions. Certain children need different kind of education, different kind of school. But I hope that's obvious. But speaking in terms of a general religious orientation we have to provide for our children, that's no less than for girls than for boys. That's already going back 90 plus years, whatever it is, to the Yaakov movement. And to me, that would be related here as well. Now, there is one final point, which I saw from Diane Boyd from Israel. He said, that's all nice and good, but maybe seminary post-high school, you can make the argument, just like the Pre-Yitzchok said, maybe for boys at an older age. So for girls, does a girl really need seminary? Now, the truth is, if you ask the high school principals, would they give the whole speech, you have to, you'll never be frum, you'll never get a shidduch, you have to go to seminary. you have to go. Okay, so I don't know. I don't know enough. My oldest daughter is only 11. But Lamaisa, assuming that a girl could maybe fetch along and have a life if she didn't go to seminary in Israel, and she could maybe epis be a little frum without going. So then maybe Taka Tzakadaku, Mr. Dayan's voice says maybe that would be possible. Although he points out, even if he says that's okay, you can only deduct the part that's for the actual Talmud Torah, for the education. The room and board, which you'd have to support, you know, you'd have to give your daughter something to eat and something to drink, and a place to sleep, those expenses, which are maybe the dominant expenses, those, even he says, you could not use even at any age. But the actual educational expenses...
You don't have to support your kids.
That's the point. If nowadays people support their daughters at that age, then you do. Okay? So we have 3 minutes. I'm sorry, I went a little bit over time. I'm sorry. Let me just tell you the bar mitzvah issue. The question of a bar mitzvah really goes to the heart of what's the chiyuv of a parent for a bar mitzvah. So here, if you take a look, this is actually brought in the Magen Avraham in Hilchos Brachos and Reish Chavchei. The Magen Avraham quotes from the source of relation of Zohar that when a child becomes bar mitzvah, there's a chiyuv to make a suda, kiyom chupaso. It's in the Magen Avraham originally. Mach Mashekel quotes as a mocker of the famous Gemara of Yosef, if you would tell me that I was chayiv in mitzvahs, I'd make a big suda. So he makes a quote from the Yamshar Shlomo Kol Shekein. There, Rabbi Yosef was already chayiv in mitzvahs, theoretically. But just on the news that he was chayiv in mitzvahs, he'd make a suda. So a boy who's going from non-chayiv to chayiv in mitzvahs, well, Kol Shekein, that you should make a suda. What's interesting about this, and if anyone's interested in more research on this topic, about bar mitzvah suda, it's not about my successum, Rabbi Willie, years ago, when his mother passed away on her yurt site, he published a sefer on Mordechai Masechet Brachos. So one of the last simonim in that sefer is on bar mitzvah and bas mitzvah and certain halakhic sugyos that relate to it. And he has a very nice piece on there, and he asked just two very basic questions. First of all, what does this have to do with Yom Chupasel? What's the connection between this and making a wedding for your child? And number two is, if you use Rav Yosef as the model, so then it's the Bar Chayuva who's chayiv. It's the boy who's chayiv to make a suda, not his father. No one said that Rav Yosef's father was going to make him a suda. Rav Yosef said he was going to make a suda for himself. So to make a long story, not such a long, but a moderately sized story shorter, Rabbi Willig is Mechayiv that there's really two dinim. One din is the din of becoming a Bar Chayuva, which he says Taka, the son, has a chiv on himself. His father may help him fulfill it, but it's really the son's, if Allah maybe like Mitzvah Mila, which is B'pashas, the son's chiyuv, but the father helps him fulfill. That's one chiyuv. And then there's a separate chiyuv, which the father has as an independent chiyuv. And what's that chiyuv? To celebrate the fact that he has fulfilled his parental responsibilities of being melamed a child to that age, just like using the Gemara and Kiddushin of Mitzvah Ta'aval HaBen, just like a father would have a chiyuv to make a wedding suda for his child, because that's one of the chiyuvim he has, is to bring a child to Chuppah, and the suda is, and he quotes Makarzus, it's almost like a suda of thanksgiving or praise that I have fulfilled my parental responsibilities. And those are two separate mechayivim, and he suggests that there could be a calendaric nafkamina, namely that what we call Baltimore the Bobayom. Says that's the chiyuv like the Rav Yosef of becoming a Bar Chayuva, and that's really the son's chiyuv. And that has to be, by definition, Bo Bayom, the day that he becomes a Bar Chayuva. That's the day to celebrate that kiyum. As opposed, and there's really no flexibility. Either you do it then or you don't do it then. A day later, it already happened. However, this idea of a general bar mitzvah suda before, well, not before, I should say, but a week after, 2 weeks after he came up from Sukhoi camp, or whatever the case may be, he says that's totally legitimate, because that's a separate chiyuv. That's the father's sudas hoda, so to speak, for fulfilling his parental responsibility, and of course you'd want to approximate it to the date, but there's no per se reason it has to be on the date. They're really two separate chiyuvim. So my thoughts about the bar mitzvah kiddush, to finish up in 2 minutes or less, are as follows. Bapashas is a chiyuv, one way or the other, to make some kind of a suda. So on my first reaction is mamonav shach. There's no way this can count for my six of them. If you hold it's a chiyuv to have chont and hot kugel and whatever else you want to put out, so when you have a chiyuv, then you don't get... And we see that there is such a notion of a chiyuv to make a bar mitzvah suda. So if you say there's a chiyuv, so then you certainly are not allowed to use the mitzvah. And if you say there's no chiyuv to do it, so then why are you doing it? Because you want to show off, because you like to throw in a good party, you know, we're all human, and people make more nicer or less nice parties for all sorts of different reasons. But again, that's got nothing to do with the mitzvah. So why would you have a right? Why would you have a right to count that for my six of them? Again, if you want to just be making on the whole shalom because you hold the minig anyway, that's a different question. But to say that a kiyum is a fulfillment towards my six of them for someone who really is trying to be makbid on it, to me, mamonoshach, it wouldn't work. And then I saw the one thing I was looking in all these contemporary sperms to see maybe somebody spoke about it. And the answer is apparently the Arba Labas who asked me is the first person who ever asked it. Because it's not in any of the books. The closest thing I found, and with this we'll conclude, the closest thing I found, which I think confirms what I was describing, is that the Tzedakah Mishpat, Dayan Bloy, discusses the following. Let's say in general you were hiring a worker. And you know a guy's down on his luck. So you hire an Ani, Bedafka, to help him out. Does that count as Meister Ksafim? So the fact that he would get paid, you know, $8 an hour or whatever, no matter who you hired, so then just because he's an ani doesn't mean he gets counted as master something. But let's say, as a real mensch, as a tzaddik, you would only give the guy a job, you pay him $15 an hour in a way that he thinks is natural, but really in your heart of hearts, you could have gotten cheaper for somebody else. You're giving him the money and the job to help him out. So the difference, Dayan Bloy says, talk of that, you can count. That's the mitzvah, that's the highest level of tzedakah. In a sense, that mitzvah tzedakah certainly works. So al derech that, I saw this Rabbi Taub quoted in his book. He gave the closest thing to a contemporary mashal. He said, like we have in Baltimore, and I guess they have in Toronto, things like this also, like with Gvuras Yarden, like you would get your flowers, your centerpieces from them. So to the extent that you're paying them the same amount you would have paid had you gone to a real florist, that's a nice thing to do, but that's not tzedakah, that's not much of something, because you would have spent the money anyway. But to the extent that either you wouldn't have done it at all, or it costs $8 a thing there, and if you went to someone else, it would only be $7 a table. The difference, anything you wouldn't have done, or the difference, he says, taka would be able to work, because then you're only doing it for the mitzvah. So again, the maisa, when it comes to the suda, I don't think, again, other than if you get from first yard or things, I don't think, or obviously Israel, you're not, other than that, you're not, that svara, I think, confirms what I was saying. That's not going to apply to a typical bar mitzvah suda or kiddush, where, as I said, either you're obligated to do it, or you're just doing it for your own personal reasons. But either way, I think it would be way, way too far of a stretch. You know, someone who really needs, who can't afford to do it stam, and therefore can only do it if the kenner is their meiser, have a much better solution. Don't do it. But I think it would be way, way too of a stretch, according to almost any, no matter how mikkel one wanted to be, to count this kind of thing for my success. All right, good Shabbos. We should all be in the position to give and not need to receive.
Oh,
that's the biggest problem.
Thank you.